On today's episode of Double Down Trent, it is wild card weekend in the NFL, and somehow the NFL has made it even better, as now we have six wild card games to watch this weekend. We got plenty of action. We're making all of our picks, including the much anticipated rematch of the Ravens and the Titans, and we have a very first triple action crossfire on one of our picks. You do not want to miss it, so stay tuned for episode 95 of Double Down Trent.
Double Down Trent, you might want to tune in. Talking gambling and sports, predicting who might win. Pop culture to movies, let's start up the combo. Ryan and Aaron, man versus the motto. Keep it authentic and it's always live. So competitive, so you know it's always hype. Make sure you subscribe, trust you don't want to miss. Going all in here on Double Down Trent. Hey, yeah. Double Down Trent, let's go.
This is Double Down Trent. All right, welcome to Double Down Trent, the podcast where two elementary school buddies are talking sports, gambling, and pop culture. My name is Ryan. I am your co-host, as always. Joining us tonight, Mr. Model Aaron. How's it going, bud?
We are entering wild card weekend. I feel like I need a new nickname called Maverick or something. I don't know what goes with wild card. But I am excited talking to NFL. Had a little bit of a blip there last week. Had lost a couple of my crossfires against some of these other fine gentlemen, but coming back and looking for redemption this weekend.
Hey man, that's what happens in this game. Sometimes you go through hot streaks, sometimes you go through cold streaks. It's just part of the game. We are also joined by our NFL insider, Coulter. How are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, we're 48 hours away from one of the greatest weekends of our lives. This is what we've been waiting for, you know, since our inception. Six wild card games, a great weekend of football lies ahead. You know, in one game, you've got two quarterbacks who have defied the odds probably more than any pair of playoff gunslingers ever have, you know, and they're playing each other, which is absolutely incredible. You've got two really good divisional games that I think will be pretty smash mouth. And then you've got the Saints trying to stop their embarrassing stretch of playoff losses. You got Frank Reich returning home to Buffalo. You know, the comeback is going to be there in full swing, I think. And obviously a rematch of the most embarrassing loss from last postseason. So all in all, there's six really good games, plenty of storylines to hit on. And I'm just excited to get to the action.
Yeah, the intrigue is fantastic, but you said it perfectly. There's six games this weekend, and that is just music to my ears. I've always been saying on that first wild card Saturday, when you got to sit and wait till like 4:30 on Saturday for the first game to start, it's just grueling. And now we've got it, full slate of games. Oh, I cannot wait. We are also joined by our Patriots expert who's living in Philly, Bill Hughes. How you doing, Bill?
Doing well. How you guys doing tonight? It's good to be with you. It's kind of crazy. I feel like you guys are inviting me back because I keep losing all these crossfires. So it's, you know, putting money in your pocket. So smart move. But I was 0-2 last week, but looking forward to these wild card games. I think there's definitely some money to be made out there because though I don't love a lot of the underdogs, I mean, we know somebody's going to hit. It's just the way that this weekend will go. Maybe two, maybe three. You never know. So it's trying to figure out which one that's going to be. So I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, man, it's like in Rounders when Worm and Mike lose that first thing and the boyfriend goes, hey, your money's always good here. Come back.
Exactly.
Well, what I want to point out, too, is that this is a really interesting playoffs because there are six Super Bowl winning quarterbacks in the playoffs. It is wild. Obviously, Rodgers and Mahomes have the bye, so only a couple of them are going this weekend here. But amazing stuff here. Now, let's just take a quick look back. Before we get to the wild card games, Hughes, you're in Philly. Let's start there. I guess the good news is Philly found their quarterback of the future in Nate Sudfeld. I mean, I guess you got to commend him for that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that there were a lot of things that happened during that game. I think that the communication seemed like it was a little bit lacking in terms of what was going to happen. But then you had Travis Kelce come out. Jason Kelce. Come out and really talk about the fact that Doug had talked about getting Sudfeld some time and that, you know, like it was really part of the plan. The timing of it was the problem. Why he didn't start the second half, why he didn't play the whole game, you know, if you really want to give him some run, to do it at that moment felt like they were forfeiting the game. And it felt like it was a tank and it felt like it was for all the wrong reasons. And ultimately, Sudfeld didn't look ready to go, looked terrible. Kelsey took a little bit of the heat for that after bouncing a snap off his shin bone. But at the same time, I don't know. I thought it was kind of an unfortunate way, especially with a playoff game on the line, especially because the NFL flexed it into the night game. There were just so many factors there that just put it in a spotlight. The last game, regular season game of the year, all of a sudden, you know, kind of like turns into that. Doug Peterson also has not been having a good season. The Eagles are wrought with, I don't want to call it controversy, but like what they're going to do at quarterback. There's been stories coming out every day about Carson Wentz, his relationship, taking time to figure out if this is where what he really wants to be. So yeah, I mean, there was a lot going on in that game, and I think for the NFL, unfortunately, turned into a little bit of a black eye.
Oh, for sure. And Coulter, you know, we were talking about it as it was happening. The timing of it was strange, and now Doug Peterson's got to deal with the fallout. I mean, how do you now go and control and win over a locker room after a performance like that?
Yeah, I was texting you guys in the week. I was wondering if there were odds that he'd get surprisingly fired. I know they said that he was safe, but I thought there for a glimpse that the locker room, all the things that were coming out of it, they might just turn on Doug P and just say, you know what, we're done with him. Because of all, and I know we talked about this off the podcast, I love the Eagles win total under next year. I just feel like that is a great bet. I know it's 9 months out looking ahead to the 2021 season, but this is a guy who basically has a 1 year prove it, you know, with Hurts next year. And if they don't exceed expectations, he's gone. I do not like what he's going into off of that Washington game. All sorts of bad blood in the division now too. That's not an easy division. I just think that they've gone from champs to chumps so radically quick. I can't remember a champion in any of the four major pro sports that have just dissolved this quickly. The Eagles have turned into a punchline. It's really bad. This is a roster that was really well constructed. I know Hughes obviously didn't enjoy losing to them at the Super Bowl, but I mean, you got to say that that was a well-built team, and all of a sudden it is just unraveled there really quick. And I mean, we talked about it last season that players didn't like Wentz in the locker room, and the locker room has just continued to be bad. And this decision, I think, is just, you know, it stoked the fire even more. And now you've got Hurts and all these bads. It's just terrible. I do not like Philly at all. Outlook is doom and gloom for them, for me.
Yeah, and I was sitting here watching it. As a Giants fan, I obviously wanted the Eagles to win this game because that would propel the Giants into the playoffs. But I was very torn watching it because, like I've said in the podcast multiple times, I ultimately think it was in the best interest of the Giants not to make it to the playoffs. But this actually worked out, in my opinion,
even
very
better.
Well, Giants,
you got a little like bonus win because the Eagles have just pie on their face for the rest of their life.
Exactly. We went out and played hard. We got a win the last week of the season. Put yourself in, I guess, kind of a position. I know we needed to win more games, and you know you can't rely on teams to do your dirty work, but they got the win, and ultimately they missed the playoffs. So now I think they're picking number 11, which is good. But you know, on the flip side, Mr. Model, you had picked the Washington football team when we were looking ahead and kind of doing the who's going to win the NFC East. They have a tough matchup this week, and not to look ahead, but I mean, do you like their defense maybe to come through a little here?
So you got to think that their defense is going to have to perform in this case in order to keep this game close. I don't want to give anything away, but this is definitely one of the games I looked at for this weekend. I don't think Washington football team has much of a chance to win outright, but I think the line that we're seeing definitely has me a little bit interested.
Okay. Yeah, it's a compelling number. It's a big number, and they're a home dog, so that's something we'll look at. We'll save the pick, but I do want to talk to you also, Mr. Model, about a key crossfire that you were on the wrong end of. I said the Bills. They were a wagon. Hughes has been riding them. I jumped on board. You picked Miami, and yeah, it backfired, my friend. What was going on in that game?
That thing just crashed and burned almost immediately. I didn't like that pick at all. I was shocked to see how well Buffalo played. I just think that the momentum and, you know, to me, their perception in the market is probably at an all-time high. So, again, as I look to this wild card weekend, you know, it's not to say I'm going to be jumping on any Indianapolis money line outright. But, you know, 6.5 is decent. I think this is going to be a close game. I think the Colts will be tough. But, yeah, I was shocked to see how well Buffalo played. They're definitely a free team. I saw on Twitter today that they were dancing to Can't Touch This. So those guys are feeling good.
Yo, yeah. You got to love what you see. When the team is loose and relaxed and having fun like that, I mean, that is a huge sign. And not to spoil it as well, but this is my AFC team and our little challenge that we're doing for the playoffs. The flip side of that game, though, and let's get into it, is the Dolphins and specifically Tua. Now, Coulter, you've been riding him. We did not see anything from Tua that makes you think he's the quarterback of the future, what would you be doing if you're the Dolphins GM?
I'd be looking at quarterback third overall. I really would. Whether or not it's fair, I don't see how you can give this guy anything but an incomplete. I know injuries have accounted for a lot of his story, but you're talking about a guy who stepped up against Georgia as a true freshman and since then has done what exactly in big moments? He beat the crap out of a horrible Oklahoma defense, going toe-to-toe with Kyler Murray in the Orange Bowl, only be totally outclassed by then-freshman Trevor Lawrence in the national championship game. His stats don't reflect how poorly he actually played in that one. Does that sound familiar? Kind of like last weekend against Buffalo. And then if you look at his final year at Alabama, again, extremely accurate, terrific passer rating, yada, yada, yada. He also had Jerry Jeudy and a Heisman winner as his receivers. The non-conference games were against Duke, Southern Miss, New Mexico. Not exactly juggernauts. Of course, he got hurt, so we might not ever know what happened to him. But before he exited, he was outshined by yet another QB whose name is familiar to you all now, and that's Joe Burrow. If Tua is so good, how did he allow LSU to usurp Alabama for the throne of the SEC last year? He set all these records, and he won one national championship with a Jalen Hurts-led team. He basically came in as relief in that game. I don't buy this guy's college success. Everybody says he's the best college quarterback that's ever played. Am I missing something? And I definitely don't see how that translates to the pros. Dolphins will make a great, they're going to be making an error if they're doubling down on him next season. I think they should cut bait. This guy is just always going to be mediocre, if not flat out bad, like he was on Sunday. This is a must-win game. He didn't show up at all. He just doesn't look like a pro passer. And the tape on him, I'm not impressed with at all. He's a lefty. I don't like having to have a lefty quarterback and reorganize your offense like that. I say look at quarterback at number 3 or at your number 17 pick. Definitely get some competition in there. I know they said they were not going to re-sign Fitzpatrick. I think it's a bad idea to let him just be the starter without any sort of pressure behind him, because I don't think that guy's going to succeed long-term in the NFL.
The interesting thing to me is in college, you know, he put up these numbers where he was the most accurate passer in NCAA history. I know what does that mean, but like what stands out to me, and Hughes, I want to get your thoughts on this, is we saw him in Alabama throw the ball deep and we saw him take chances. We're not seeing that at all from him. Like, is this just something that's a product of who he's got around him, or is this just kind of who Tua is going to be?
Yeah. I think that's the toughest part of this entire thing is, you know, Tua from the perspective of, you know, really what he brings to the table, it did all go away when he got hurt. And I think this was the first kind of time where he's been at in live action. I think they were super conservative as they went through the games that he played in. I mean, they fired Chan Gailey, I believe, or Chan Gailey stepped down or whatever. So they're going to bring in a new offensive voice, I think. And I mean, I do think they need to open up the offense. I said it about last week that I thought that, you know, he just needs to play football. I thought he was thinking too much. He was trying to, you know, figure things out, and it's hard. I mean, we've seen guys make the transition from college to the NFL, and the windows are much smaller, especially when you're playing with guys. I mean, you know, we all know the skill position guys at Alabama. I mean, it's not like they're not churning out other positions that are absolutely at the top. I mean, they had 3 of the top 5 Heisman guys this year, and Mac Jones wasn't even like a real recruit. I mean, like, if you just see what they do with guys, it's unbelievable. But they all help each other, right? High tide raises all boats. Like, there's an element to Alabama that is all these guys are kind of overrated, and I don't mean that in a bad way. But like, yes, I think Tua is a little, but I do think he can have a productive NFL career. So I don't think it's worth jettisoning him. I do think with that pick, you have to look at it, which is why I think they look at trading him. We were talking about this before we started recording. I think they look at trading him because when you have that pick, you got to look at quarterback. And I do think, like, you can get a return on potentially on Tua, because I think there are teams out there that would give him a shot. I don't think that maybe you can get, you know, as much back as you maybe paid for him, but I do think you can get something. So I don't know. I think, you know, I think there is some prove it in Tua's game, and he's going to have to come out and show it. But I don't want to bury him after this being kind of his first go in the NFL and back from injury and with what seemingly was not a very dynamic offense.
I think that's fair. And, you know, the thing that I would float out there as a possibility at 3, why don't you pair him up with his Alabama teammate, Devontae Smith? Give him a weapon. Yeah. See what happens. It's just I always thought that he had the ability to throw the ball deep, and, you know, maybe it's a combination of everything. They didn't open up the playbook with him. They don't have enough weapons around him, or maybe he's just not the guy. But I was completely stunned by the end of that game, and it was just wild that the Dolphins got blown out that badly in a game that they needed to make the playoffs. It was really strange. Now, I do want to selfishly mention a little scenario that I had. And as I was going through the games, I was having some really awesome luck, but my actual cash bets were backfiring on me. And I reached a point where I was about to lose it, and this is just about the time when Nate Sudfeld entered the game. So let me set the scene for everybody, okay? I am sitting holding a multiple tickets, actually, on the Washington football team. I got them early in the week at -2. I doubled down at them on -3. So I have pretty good money on them. And I thought, well, hey, listen, if the football team wins and covers, I win some money. The Giants miss out on the playoffs. It is what it is. But I get some cash in my pocket. The flip side is if the Eagles win, hey, you know what? The Giants make the playoffs. But there was a small little window where the football team could have won and not covered. And I was losing my mind because it was looking like that was going to happen. So I start flipping around on TV to like cool my jets, clear my head. And I see Avengers Endgame. And I just thought to myself, oh my God, I'm about to experience gambling Endgame. I'm going to lose money. My team is going to not make the playoffs. And it's just going to be a meltdown. Luckily, Nate Sudfeld came through and cashed some tickets in my pocket. But gambling Endgame. It was close, and I want to make this. I want to make this a phrase. Maybe we can make this catch on somehow. But yeah, I like it. Okay, Mr. Model, let's go ahead. Let's look back and put a bow on the 2020 season for the Double Down Trent Challenge.
What a season it's been too. It's been really fun to do this with all the listeners, and I'd like to start with by giving kudos to our two leaders in the clubhouse. That's right, we finished with a tie in the lead. So Hannibal had a fantastic week, and Megan Cazalet just really suffered here. So they both finished with 46 points overall. I just want to call this out. So unfortunately, Megan went 0-5 in her week 17 picks. She had Dallas, Miami, Chicago, Arizona, and Philadelphia. It was just utter carnage for her, and it was just a shame to see. Hannibal ended up making up some ground here. He went 3-2. He had Green Bay, New York, and Washington football team for 3 points, and he also had Arizona and Miami, which both missed. So therefore, we ended at 46 points total. Kudos to both of them. They are the winners of this year's Double Down Trent NFL Pick'em Challenge. Super fun. Not to mention now, in a close third place, the man, Ryan, came in with 45 points. Just, I think that's a phenomenal performance. You ended up going 3-2 in your last week, so not too bad. You could have even won if you had gotten 5-0, but pretty good for you, 45 points overall. Really fun to see. Thanks for all the listeners. The last thing I'll call out, I did end up losing both to Coulter and Luann in my picks. I did not do too well. I will be going to those guys hat in hand and seeing if I can do better next year.
Listen, Mr. Model, and this goes out to Megan. Week 17 is a minefield. You got to figure out how to navigate it. So, you know, let's get the bad picks out in week 17, and she's going to be hot and focused for wild card weekend here in the playoffs. So we'll see what we can do with her. Now, I'd like to take a second and address myself. I'm hot, piping hot. Okay, I know I went 3-2 in the challenge, but guess what? On the podcast, I'm 4-0 in my last four picks. I'm 5-0 in my last five crossfires. I am just oozing heat right now. So I just got to let this heater continue. I've got my eyes on the picks, and I feel good, Mr. Model. So let's go through. Why don't you give us the lines for all the games this weekend? And I do want to let the listeners know that because there's only six games this weekend, we are going to include the over-under as a possible option for you to pick as one of your key picks, or you know, any of your picks. So over-unders are in play, and let the action begin, Mr. Model.
So what I'll do is I'll just quickly go over what I'm seeing as current lines as we're recording, and we will loop back with some of these games to see what folks like with them and or if they come up. So on Saturday, January 9th, we have three games scheduled, which will be awesome. The first game, Indianapolis against Buffalo. Buffalo is currently the favorite at -6.5 or -6, depending on your book. And I'm largely seeing 51 as the total right now across multiple books. The second game, LA Rams and Seattle Seahawks. Seattle is the favorite at -3 or -3.5. And the total I'm seeing is anywhere from 42, 41.5, or even 42.5 juiced. And then the third game on Saturday, Tampa Bay against Washington football team. Tampa Bay, the huge home favorite. Tampa Bay -8 or -8.5. And then the total I'm seeing is right around 44 to 44.5. So those are the three games on Saturday. Sunday, three games. First game we have is Baltimore and Tennessee. Baltimore is a slight favorite right now at -3 or -3.5. I suspect that -3.5 will be going away very soon. It seems like it's juiced the other way right now. Tennessee, the total I'm seeing is right around 54.5, which has, I think, trickled up from where this opened. Second game, Chicago and New Orleans. New Orleans is the heavy favorite here at -10 or -10.5. The total that I'm seeing is 47 or 47.5. And then the last game, Cleveland-Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is the favorite here at -6. The total is right around 47. Those are the six games we got.
Lots of action. It's going to be really, really good slate of games, I think. I don't think there's going to be any blowouts here, but who knows? I also want to point out, too, let's do a little quick recap of our Double Down Trent little postseason challenge that the four of us are engaged in. So we each picked a team from the AFC and the NFC. Let me run down the teams here. So I'm representing the Packers and the Bills. Mr. Model, you've got the Saints and the Steelers. Hughes, you got the Bucks and the Titans. And Coulter, you ride in the Seahawks and the Chiefs. The point system that we agreed here. So we're going to do 1 point for a win in the wild card round. You're going to get 1 point for a bye into the divisional round. 2 points for a divisional round win. 5 points for a conference championship win. And then if you got the Super Bowl winner, you're getting 10 points. So right off the bat, Coulter and I starting off hot. We got 1 point each. So it's going to be interesting. So, hey, Coulter, since you got one free point here, let's turn it over to you. And why don't you make the first pick for Wild Card Weekend?
I'm willing to make a bet here that over under 2.5 crossfires. I might get all three of you guys to crossfire me on this one. Woo! This one, I'm going to wait to place until Saturday because I think Joe Public is going to keep pounding it down and down and down. I am a fan of the Rams over 41.5 points. I'm going against the public and the sharp money here. I'll take an offensive genius and a top five quarterback getting the lowest total of the weekend, and I'm going to bang it. Some of my reasoning here, I see this game being one of, if not the most competitive games of the weekend with multiple lead changes. Lead changes mean points. Even field goals help us get to that over, I think. People will see how bad the Rams offense was last week and get scared, but in reality, Cooper Kupp is back, Andrew Whitworth is back, potentially Jared Goff is back. Even if Wolford is the starter, I think he's adequate enough to get us to this total. If it is Goff under center, I think it's even better for us. Either quarterback is going to go out and enjoy the emergence of workhorse Cam Akers and really could benefit from a banged up Seattle secondary with Jamal Adams nursing. He had a shoulder surgery this week and he's going to play. I don't know if I really like that for Seattle or not. One more point here before I stop rambling. The Rams are a desperate team. We've gone over this on the pod a couple of times. Arguably the most desperate team of any in this postseason. This is their year to win. They're not going to let up, especially against a division rival. If this game doesn't go their way early, most people think that it's going to be Seattle 14-3 and they're just going to hold on to that lead. No, I expect the Rams to come back. And that means the over will cash eventually. I think both this game will get tied up eventually, 17-17, 20-20. I've heard a lot of people talk about this game like Seattle is going to go up and cruise to another easy victory. That's just not going to happen here. Don't let the recent history blind you here. I think this is actually a really important point, too. Last three meetings have gone under in this series and way under. But before that, the previous five games between these two clubs went over by a margin of 9.9 points. On the total. I really like this as an under the radar total that nobody's going to be on. You can already see that people have pounded it down from whatever it opened at. I think it was 43.5. It's already down to 41.5. I'm going to buy it at its lowest number whenever that happens. If you guys want to crossfire me at 41.5, that's fine. And just one little tidbit before I let you guys hit those buzzers. The Rams haven't been shootout prone as their counterpart this year. But let's not forget they played the Cards 38-28 just a month ago. That's more close to what this offense is really like. This is an explosive offense when they're humming. I know Goff is hurt, and I know Wolford could potentially be the quarterback, but this is a pretty good offense. I think they're being miscast as this terrible offensive team just because they had a down week last week. And you're also probably thinking Seattle's offense has slowed down, and it has over the last month. But let's not forget, Russ is 9-6 in his career in playoff games with a pass rating of 96.7. If you compiled his postseason stats as a regular season campaign, he'd be the MVP of the league. And no, those Seattle teams all haven't been winners. One other random factoid. In postseason games where Wilson has been sacked three or more times, which is an argument I keep hearing about the under, Aaron Donald's going to sack him, they're not going to be able to move the ball, blah, 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 blah. The Hawks are actually 6-3 on the over in those games where he gets sacked a lot. This is a guy who likes getting hit. He's like Andrew Luck. He's bizarre. Is it really surprising that a gamer like Russ Wilson plays better and excels more when the game gets more intense? I think it makes sense to me. I think Joe Public looks right past all these facts. One last tidbit. The last time a division rivals played each other in the postseason, it was Saints-Panthers a couple years ago, 31-26. That game went over. Their previous matchup went under. I think there's a familiarity factor. The offensive coordinators are going to get to know what the defenses do well. I think all of it benefits a little bit of points. I'm not saying this game is going to be 31-30. I'm just asking them to get over 41.5. And quite frankly, I guarantee this game will be 41 by Saturday. Joe Public will continue to pound it down. Bring on the crossfire, boys. I know you want to.
All right, Hughes, let's turn it over to you first.
I'll crossfire that. I mean, I think as this game appears to me, the unknown piece about Goff, but also if you look at the last couple of games that both of these teams have played, I think a lot of these games, I like a lot of the unders. It feels, you know, it's like one of those things that, you know, I don't necessarily want to root for, 18-15 football. But at the end of the day, I think we're going to see a little bit of that this weekend, just based off the fact that, it's the playoffs, you know. And I think I like the under in this game particularly because I don't have a lot of faith in what the Rams can do. I mean, I was looking at their last couple games. I think they had 9 points, 18 points. And I know that's not with Goff, but they haven't, I think they had 23 weeks ago. So it hasn't been much of an explosive offense. I'll crossfire that. I like the under there.
Mr. Otto.
You know, I'm not interested in getting involved on either side here. I could totally see how this game goes over. And to Coulter's point, you know, when I think of this game, like you're telling me that 20-23 gets this game over. I'm like, wow. Like, yeah, I could see that happening in the first half. So, I don't know. I've been following the Seahawks pretty closely this year just because I've had a ticket on them and their defense has just been an abomination. I can't believe they're making it to the playoffs. So I could see the Rams offense starting to click, even if they have, Goff coming back partly injured or this rookie unproven quarterback also coming in. So I just am going to stay away from this game as far as possible. No interest.
Okay. Now, a little quick tidbit here. Seattle is now on my blacklist of gambling teams. They really fucked me last week. They went ahead, they scored the touchdown with like a minute 10 to go in the game, and then they let the Niners drive 85 yards down and score another meaningless touchdown that lost me the spread. So fuck you, Seattle.
I heard some sharp guys say that over was a fluke over. I'm like, no, I was watching that game. There was something fluky about it. Seattle and the Niners traded touchdowns late in the game. There might have been a fumble six or whatever, but guess what? With Jared Goff, there's a pick six opportunity waiting to happen in every game. You know, I love that factor. I love Goff throwing a pick six. That helps me, right?
It does. I'm going to go Tony Kornheiser here once again. I'm going to throw on my spectacles because I took some notes here. I got some information here. I loved this when it was 42.5 and I wanted the under. 41.5 makes me sweat a little bit, but I'm officially going to crossfire with you here, Hughes. I'm jumping on the bandwagon. I don't buy what Seattle's doing right now, especially on defense. And I know you can say, hey, maybe that's an opportunity for the Rams to put up some points. Let me say this. You were right, Coulter. The last two times they met, the total was 39 and 29. Seattle's offense also scares me, okay? The first eight games of the season when Russ was going to be this MVP candidate, they were cooking their averaging 34 points a game. The last eight, they're going to 23. Now, I know 23, maybe 23-20, that gets you over the number. I don't love it. And I actually think if Goff is the quarterback, I think this is even better for the under. I actually think Wolford gives them an opportunity to be a little frisky. We saw him run a little bit. We saw him move a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a 2017 game. So I'm going to ride with Hughes here, and I'm going to take the under as a crossfire.
I knew it would get action. I purposely put it as my first best bet because I'm just being generous towards the listeners. I want action for the listeners.
We are not playing par golf today. This is not par golf.
This is aggressive. This is Bryson DeChambeau right down the middle.
All right, Hughes, let's get your first pick.
All right, so I've gone back and forth on a couple of these, but I think I'm confident in what I saw this year. I'm not confident in the end result, but this is a little bit of a homer pick. But I'm going with the Titans +2, +3.5. I think this is going to be a lower scoring game. I think the defense is going to be a little bit more a part of it than maybe some of the last couple of Titans games. And I think ultimately the Ravens have been good, but they've also been terrible at times this year. And so I really think that the ball control of the Titans and what Henry's able to do, I think will bring a level of pace to the game that this won't get out of hand. And I think that I ultimately like the Titans money line, obviously, given the fact that I've got them in our pool. But I do like them in this game. And I think everybody's on the Ravens. There's too many people that are on the Ravens. Everybody thinks the Ravens are going to win the Super Bowl. Everybody thinks the Ravens are the best team in the AFC right now. I agree that they've looked good. It hasn't been against the level of competition that I think they're going to get this weekend. And so I'm on the Titans.
Okay. Coulter, your thoughts?
Yeah, no crossfire for me. I'm going to be rooting for Tennessee in this game. So therefore, I'm not going to be backing Baltimore in any sort of gambling. You know, I've been an anti-Baltimore guy for the last 2 years now. So I'm going to sit back and just watch this game, root for Derrick Henry. I'm a big fan of his. The one thing that I'm really cautious about in this game is Tennessee's special teams are really suspicious. And I think Baltimore's are really good. John Harbaugh's a special teams ace. And I think that's actually a huge advantage for Baltimore in the playoffs. And we'll get to another game, I'm sure, later where there's a special teams advantage that's a little bit noteworthy as well. But this is one where I think there's a real advantage for Baltimore. I can't back them, though. 3.5 on the road, I don't understand that. I think there are equal teams. Tennessee's defense stinks, and I think Lamar can exploit that with his legs. And there might be a case where Lamar is the best player on the field on Sunday, but I'm not going to pay. I'm not going to lay the 3.5 to find that out. So I'm going to pass. I like Tennessee. I'm going to root for Tennessee.
Okay, Mr. Model, you going to crossfire?
No, not interested in this one either. I'm a ticket holder for the Baltimore Ravens, so I'm definitely going to be rooting for them to win outright. I don't love Baltimore -3, -3.5 here, though. To me, that I could totally see Tennessee covering that, still losing, which would be, my hope. Or if Baltimore cruises and covers this easily, I'll take that one too, but I'm not interested in getting involved here.
So, Hughes, you made a couple of good points. The Ravens are rolling and are on fire, but they really haven't played anybody. And I watched them closely when they played the Giants, and you know their ground game is impressive, but this is a rematch of what we saw last year. These two teams played last year in Baltimore with fans, and Tennessee got the win. They got the outright win. My lean here is Tennessee, but I'm not touching this. I'm not going to ultimately bet this number. It just too much can go on here. What happens if the Ravens are down 10-0? This is a scenario we've gone over many times, especially you, Coulter. If they go down 10-0, how are they coming back? It was the exact scenario we saw last year. So my lean here is Tennessee, but I'm not going to touch this game. So I guess you played some par golf there, Hughes. Well done.
I don't know how that was par golf, but I will say this. When we were talking about competition, the Ravens ended the season, Dallas at Cleveland, which was a really good game, Jacksonville, New York Giants, Cincinnati. I think it's a great way to get right, but at the same time, I think they're going to run into a little bit of a different level this weekend than they've had the last couple. And I do think it's going to make a difference, and it's on the road. I don't know how many fans are going to be in Tennessee, but there will be fans there, I'm pretty sure. Similar to what, you know, one of the other games where I think that could have a big impact. As we're starting to see some of these, you know, playoff games and teams wanting fans in the building to have some level of impact, I do think, you know, we'll see if the home field ends up mattering a little bit more in the playoffs than it has during the season.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting thing to watch. Just normally they get 3 points and built into the line, and I think there's still a little bit of home field built into these lines, but I just can't see it having that big of an impact as usual. Mr. Model, let's get your first pick.
All right, here we go. So for my first pick, I am going to the Indianapolis-Buffalo game, and I am going to go ahead and take the under 51 points for the total here. A couple of pieces of thinking here. I think Buffalo is coming in at an all-time high with in terms of perception from the crowds and from the public. I think people cannot jump on their bandwagon much more than they already have. I think Indianapolis is coming in with an incredibly strong defense that needs to show up and perform. I think I see this game as being close. Given that this is in Buffalo, it's going to be cold. It's going to be about 33 degrees as the high. Eight miles per hour of wind. I just think this is going to be, a gut him out, fight him out, stay low, run the game to win. So I am going to take the under 51, and I am going to hope that the teams don't get up to anywhere close to 30 on each side.
I'm just going to jump right out and crossfire you right off the bat here. I'm sorry, my friend.
Triple.
We got a triple crossfire here, Mr. Model.
I'm excited about this game, and you're probably right because this does feel like, but I feel like this one's going over.
My only fear is, like, we saw this last year. The Bills played the first game of the playoffs last year against the Titans, and it was a gross, sloppy, low scoring game from teams we thought were going to put up points. I think this year is different, though. We're seeing the Bills team. They're peaking. They are just a steamrolling machine on offense. I'm going to rattle off you the last couple of weeks here, Mr. Model, and let you know what they put up here.
All right.
Okay, so they put up 34, 26, 48, 38, and then 56 last week. They went over this number 51 just themselves last week against a really good Miami defense. I do think this game is going over, not just for the Bills offense, but I think the Colts offense has found a nice little rhythm as well. We finally saw Jonathan Taylor get put into the fold, and they've got a legitimate running game now. Phillip Rivers is always prone to a bad turnover, a pick here and there. I think what we're going to see is Buffalo coming out of the gate, Indy coming back and throwing the ball, moving the ball, and turn the ball over a little bit. So I think they could get a little sloppy. I love over 51 here. What do you think, Hughes?
Yeah, I'm same boat. I think it's funny. I was actually just looking at this. The ticket prices for the game, lowest ticket prices on Vivid Seats right now is $10,000. This place, I don't care if there's five people in there, it's going to make a difference. It's going to be raucous. This team is, again, I kind of slow played them last week. I don't know why. Didn't think that they were gonna. I thought they were gonna take a week off. They didn't. They came out, their defense is playing a lot better. I do think the Colts too. And I agree. I think the Colts have, I was very nervous about this game as someone who's holding a Bills future ticket, for the Super Bowl. I was very nervous about this first game of the playoffs against a team that's been pretty frisky. They've won three in a row. To your point, they've played good defense and run the ball. That's the recipe in the playoffs. So, Model, if there's anything that's going to run in your favor, it's that when the playoff season rolls around, the things that the Colts do well, I think, really play. That being said, I do think that this game turns into a little bit of a shootout just because Phil Rivers can't help himself. Let's be honest. He cannot help himself, and he's going to get loose with it, and so I'm liking the other.
Coulter, you're on this crossfire. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think in any situation, this game is going to go over because if you have Indianapolis, let's say they jump out to like a 7-0 lead or a 7-3 lead, Buffalo is, they're going to fire back. They're going to throw, and they won't stop throwing. And if they take the early lead, you guys are right. Rivers can't help himself. He will throw pick sixes that will help our over, and he will throw garbage time touchdowns, I feel like. My one concern is actually brought this up with the special teams in the Baltimore game. Indianapolis is the number one ranked special teams unit in the entire league. So I'm looking towards the Colts at +7 if you can get that number. I just think that's an important factor in the playoffs. But I do think even if they jump out to an early lead, that's just only going to spark the Josh Allen attack. They've got four receivers that are really dynamic down the field, and he can score a touchdown quickly with Brown or Diggs. Diggs is playing as good a football as anybody in the NFL. I think the Colts secondary is really weak. And I mentioned it in my opening little spiel, the Frank Reich comeback factor. No matter what happens in this game, if the Colts go up, the Bills will come back and score. If the Colts are down, how do you not want to root for the Frank Reich comeback factor in Buffalo? This is a locker room and a sideline that has a coach that knows that he can come back from down 35 to what, 3 in a postseason game? That's inspiring. This is a good coach in Frank Reich. He's a good offensive coordinator, third downs. He's going to keep the ball going. He's going to keep the drives going. And the only way I can see this game going under is if Jonathan Taylor has a transcendent performance and goes for 200 yards and just kills our clock. If that's the case, I'm going to hedge it with the little Colts +7.
Yeah. And I want to let the listeners in on a little bit gambling trend that has been cashing in my pocket, and that is Bills first half. Take them on the money line. They have led at halftime 13 of the 16 games this year. And I was going back and I saw at least the last six games in a row, not only have they been winning at halftime, it's been a sizable number. So I've got them money line at halftime. I've also got them -3 at halftime. They just jump out to leads, this team. So there's a little ditty. I hope that works for you guys.
Kaz, I would hang out in your little gambling zone down there in DC, because if the Bills go down, there might be an opportunity where you can get Buffalo at like 3, 3.5, and that's the real play. Because my gut tells me Buffalo does go wild, but there's just too many things about the Colts that point me to that +7. Like, knowing football, and as Hughes pointed out, like, they run, they've got the offensive line. I am attracted to that big +7 number. But man, if the Colts scored early TD, I hope you're near that little zone, because pound the Bills. You'll get them nice and cheap.
I will hop in my car and drive into the zone to make some live bets on the Bills plus get money. Okay. My first pick is a game we have already talked about, and I'm going back to the Ravens Titans, but I'm actually going with the over here. I'm going to take over 54.5. I just don't see how the Titans are stopping anybody. They can't stop a nosebleed. They just let the Texans put up, what, like 40-something on them in a must-win game, which ultimately they did win on a last-second field goal. I love what Baltimore's offense is doing. Obviously, they're leaning in on the run here and really trying to establish the run game. I think what's going to be a little bit different from the playoff game last year is that I think we're going to see Lamar, hopefully, put together a little passing attack and not just be a one-dimensional team here. These teams are just over machines. So I got this one here. Again, Tony Kornheiser. Tannehill, since he started being the quarterback of the Titans, the over has gone 21-4-1 in all their overs. The Ravens have scored 37 points per game over the last five. I know they played shit teams, but I am taking this in the over 54.5. Hughes, what do you think?
Crossfire. I just when I looked at a lot of these games, I really liked a lot of the unders. I've got a feeling that this is going to turn into a little bit more of a familiar matchup than maybe everybody's playing, where it's just going to be the typical Titans defense getting lit up and blown out. And so I do think that this game is going to be a little bit more in the box than maybe some of the experts and kind of what would maybe look like it's going to be. So I think, I really like the first half under too. I mean, I think there's going to be a feeling out period, with both of these teams, but they're familiar enough with each other where it's the playoffs. There's a lot on the line, and I think they're both at a point with the structure of their teams where they both think they've got a good enough team. This isn't like nice to be in the playoffs anymore. It's like they got to win. And so I think for both of them, there's going to be a little bit of tension in the air. And I think that will lead to a little bit more defense than offense.
Okay. Coulter, what do you think?
I think these are two, offenses that want to run, and J.K. Dobbins has played really well. And I think that's actually one of the major storylines coming out of this week. I mean, Akers, you've got Dobbins, you've got a lot of rookie running backs, and Jonathan Taylor. This could be their weekend. We could be coming out on Monday being like, wow, Jonathan Taylor, Cam Akers, and J.K. Dobbins took over these games. And so if that's the case, similar to that Colts game, my one fear would be, are they just going to be on the ground too much and they're going to take off the clock? I'm not going to crossfire because I do think Tennessee's defense is really, really suspect. My one fear with the over is that Baltimore's receivers, as we talked about on this podcast, don't really scare me. If I were you though, Kaz, I would like having the over because I think Brown can take it to the house at any point. Henry can take it to the house at any point. And Marquise Brown, I know I just poo-pooed on the Ravens receivers, that terrible secondary of Tennessee, that he could take one to the house at any second too. So you got to like all those factors. I'm just going to pass and root for points and root for Tennessee in that game, but no crossfire for me. I'm a little worried that they're going to run the ball too much and it won't get to that 55 mark.
It's a legitimate concern. Mr. Muddle, the score of the game last year was 28-12. What are you doing on my pick here?
Yeah, I think I'd like to get involved here. I'll go ahead and join Hughes and crossfire you.
Okay.
Taking the under 54.5. I'm going to root for a big rushing game. This game is kind of like what I alluded to with the Indianapolis Buffalo, and I'll see if we can get both of these to hit.
All right. We got a lot of action already. I love it, boys. All right, Coulter, let's get your key pick of the week.
Yeah, before I hit my key pick, I'm going to do a contingency best bet. If the Browns get to +7, I love that number. It's right now it's sitting at 6. I don't really love that value, but I love the touchdown. If anybody wants to take the Steelers -7, I welcome that. But here's really quickly. I know the Steelers thrashed this Browns team earlier in the year and hung with them last week. I know the Browns won't have their coaches. No team has done well this season when impacted by COVID like that. They're also down Olivia Vernon and Joel Bettino. I get all the hurdles here. I know the Steelers have a rest advantage too, where the Browns just exerted them last week. There's not much to like if you look at the Browns based on the headlines and the history of this series. But I think the talent battle is pretty equal here, if not a slight lean to Cleveland. When I do a breakdown of the 10 best players in this one, I get 5 Browns: Chubb, Garrett, Sheldon Richardson, Denzel Ward, and J.C. Treader. And Pitt has 5: Watt, Tuitt, Fitzpatrick, Hayward, and Pouncey. I know a lot of people like David DeCastro, but in reality, his best years are behind him, and the Steelers really can't run the ball effectively, which is actually part of why I really love this game. On the other side of the ball, Browns offensive line, their coach has led them to be the best unit in 2020 in both pass protection and run blocking. They edged out the Niners and India for best run blocking, and they protect Baker actually surprisingly well, too. Football Outsiders also has Baker ranked 1 spot ahead of Ben, so that's an equal thing. The running game clearly favors the Browns. And lastly, nobody believes in us kind of theory going on here than the Browns, right? Of all the teams that are getting pounded this week, the Steelers are getting the most action. And for some reason, this line hasn't moved, by the way. It moved from 4 to 6 with the Stefanski news, and public keeps pouring money in on the Pitt, and yet it still hangs at 6. So I'm wondering if there's some syndicate money on Browns or whatever. I'll back with the syndicates all day long. 9 out of 10 folks think the Steelers are going to win this game straight up, no problem. I honestly might sprinkle a little bit on the money line. I like the Browns taking an early lead in this game. That gives Baker confidence. If Baker has confidence, who knows? All bets are off in this Browns team. People are forgetting how Pitt played at certain points down the stretch here. Yes, the Browns didn't look great either, but last week, remember this, the Browns were up comfortably 24-9 before allowing Pitt back into that game. Why? They got tight. This franchise hasn't been in the playoffs since 2002. There was an obvious spot for a comeback last week. It was, Pittsburgh. They weren't just playing backups. They had starters in there. They had Claypool. They had Juju Smith-Schuster. They had Connor. All Pitt skill guys were out there. That was a clear spot for me of a second-half comeback. I would have loved to have gotten action on Pittsburgh there. The Browns, I think, are going to play a lot looser on Sunday night. And I think that means good things for them with the expectations being so low. I just like this play. I think that Pittsburgh was a dog at home to Indianapolis 2 weeks ago. We talked about that on the pod. What am I missing here? The Browns beat the Colts. The Browns are better than the Colts. They're getting 7 points just because their coach and their guard and their D-end are out. What am I missing here, guys?
To me, the Stefanski thing is the biggest loss. And he's their play caller. He's their in-game strategist. To me, that's the biggest factor with the whole COVID loss. That should have swung that line even further. To me, like you said, it's suspicious. This line hasn't gone up even more. If it gets to 7, I guess you could think about the Browns here, but I'm not touching that. I'm not touching that spread. I think the loss of Stefanski makes it too risky for me.
Yeah, from the under, I think, is a great bet in this game. I do agree with much of what you said. Can I ask why they can't bubble Stefanski to allow him to call plays from the booth?
I'm making a parlay on my bet here. I think that's why the line hasn't gone up to 6 or to 7. I think there has to be some sort of inside knowledge that Stefanski can make this game.
There's a rule with the NFL that you're not allowed to use the internet at all during the game. Totally separate.
No, but I'm saying he could be in this. Like, that's where I don't understand the rule. I know he can't be around anybody based on the COVID protocols, but I don't see why he couldn't be like any other coach and just be in a booth that's by himself where he could call the plays. I get that he can't like go down at halftime and he can't like do all the stuff that like a normal, like, you know, the coach is coming out of the booth, but I don't understand why he can't do that. That's the thing that, and I'm with you. There's something weird about this. I think they run the ball a lot. I also think these are teams just trending in different directions. Like, we're talking about the Steelers that are just reeling, in my opinion, from, you know, a season where I think they thought they might have a chance to go undefeated, and now they might be a first round exit in the playoffs, just based on the fact that, you know, they're banged up and they haven't really proven that they can move the ball. Like, their offense has not been good. I like this. I like the under and I like the Browns in this game. And I think you might have talked me into a little money line. I could definitely see that happening because I think this is more about I'm not that sold on the Steelers.
Yeah. Isn't this the gambling game where people buy back into, they lose with some other game and they think, oh, I'll just do with Steelers money line and win all my money back. And then they get doubly screwed. The Sunday night game, I feel like of all the games this week is going to be the one that dick punches everybody.
Yeah. All right. Was that a little bonus pick, Coulter? Or is that going to be your
game? It was. Sorry. Well, it was a bonus pick because I like it at 7. At 6, I'm going to pass. But yeah, it goes up to 7, which I thought it would by now, honestly. I'm really shocked that it's held at 6. I really don't get how that's still there. But yeah, at 7, I like Browns. My other best bet, I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers -8. Football team looked bad on Sunday night against a team that's a complete mess, as we already talked about at the top. I don't trust Smith's calf. They don't know what to do at quarterback in Washington. Brady's history against Jack Del Rio really makes me excited. He kills this guy. I know that being a Broncos fan, he used to just dice this guy up. Motivation for a blowout is high for Tampa Bay. I think they really want to show up. I don't trust Washington to score more than 14 points in this game. I think Brady gets rid of the ball quickly and he has the weapons to do so. I think he also has a really underrated offensive line. I think they're going to protect him. A lot of people are making a case that the D-line of Washington is going to get in his face and bang him around. I actually think they're going to hold him up pretty nicely. He knows what to do to protect himself. He's a savvy veteran quarterback. The only factor I really don't like here is Rivera being 2-0 against Arians, and I don't think that's a coincidence. One coach runs a tight ship like Belichick, and the other one's a pirate. That lack of attention to detail is a red flag for me, but I'm going to just take the Bucs. I think they're going to be the team that blows. They're the one team I could see taking it to another team this week and really laying the lumber and getting up 27-7 and just kind of coasting from there. The Brady bedtime thing I know you're going to mention, I think that's accounted for here in the line. When I handicapped this game, it was 9.5. The fact that it's at 8, I think everybody is kind of factoring in that Tom is playing late at night. People know that storyline by now.
All right, Hughes, your boy. What are you doing in this game?
I'm all over this too. Love Tampa. Love him in the spot. I don't think after what we saw from football team, I don't see how they come out and play a team of this caliber and even remotely give them a game. Like they should have lost last week. And, you know, at the end of the day, with a playoff spot on line, they don't have a quarterback. Like, I love the story. They don't have a quarterback. And you can't win in the playoffs against Tom Brady when you don't have a quarterback. Like, it's just not realistic. I get how great their defensive line could potentially play. They've got game breakers. There's no doubt about it. Sweat doesn't get enough attention. That guy's unbelievable. But at the same time, like, it's just not going to be enough. Like, the Bucs have enough weapons. They're healthy enough. I think the Bucs roll. I think this is a blowout game.
Mr. Model.
Yeah, not interested in getting anywhere close to this. I had thought about taking the Washington football team +8 or even better if it kind of trickled up there toward the weekend. But I just can't do it and live with myself. So I'm staying away from this one entirely and hoping for an upset.
Yeah, I'm with you here. I'm not going to crossfire Hughes because ultimately I think the Bucs win this game. But I've got a couple little ditties here. And Coulter, you said it. These two coaches have met in the playoffs, okay? And guess what? Ron Rivera was the coach of the Carolina Panthers, who are 7-8-1, a losing record just like the Washington football team. And they beat the 11-5 Cardinals, coached by Bruce Arians. If I was the Washington football team, you know what I would do is put on a tape of the New York Giants first Super Bowl against the Patriots and show them what the front four did. Just run every stunt, every pressure, every little move that they did is the exact tape that I would have on there. Like I said, I'm not going to do it. I'm not touching it. But that would be my only concern here is that front four can cause chaos and just limit. But I don't see how they can score. I just don't see how, like you said, Hughes, I can't see them putting up more than 14 points, which is why I'm not touching this.
I mean, just sliding that reference in there is one thing. But the blasphemy of comparing the Arizona Cardinals losing, who is the quarterback of that team? It wasn't Tom Brady.
John Skeleton.
John Skeleton.
Oh, no, it wasn't somebody else. It was somebody even worse.
It's probably Rich Bartell.
Yeah, I'll have to look that one up because I'm not sure who the quarterback was.
Anderson.
Was Ryan Anderson. Lindley.
Ryan Lindley, even worse. That's what I'm saying. We're talking about Tom Brady. I mean, you can put on whatever tape you want. And you're right. you know, you can go back that far and you can see a guy who's still in the league. So, I mean, I just think this guy's played in too many of these games to not show up and to really put out all of the rumors about he can't play at night, he can't play here, he can't play there. This one's going to be a rout.
Okay. All right, Hughes, let's get your key pick.
All right, I went back and forth. I mean, I really did like the Bucks, but I mean, I'm gonna keep riding the wagon. Let's ride the Bills -6. I don't see how they don't cover this. I think that's gonna be my pick. Bills -6.
They are an absolute wagon. What do you think, Coulter?
I'd take Colts at +7, but I'm gonna stay away at -6. I do think the Bills have, similar to Tampa Bay, they have the potential to just blow this team out of the water. I think I could see actually 41-10, honestly. I don't think the Colts, you know, as we were talking about the over in that game, I was thinking, you know, how do they, you know, T.Y. Hilton's a good player and Zach Pascal and Michael Pittman, but I just think that the Bills secondary is actually a little bit better than the Colts receivers. I pass on this. I can't take Buffalo. I lean towards the Colts when it's +7, but otherwise I'm just going to pass on this one.
Okay. Mr. Model, what do you got?
Yeah, I'm not interested in taking Buffalo, taking the Indianapolis straight up against Buffalo here. I will root for the under, but I will stay away from rooting for Indianapolis +6.
Yeah, I'm with you, Hughes, at -6. I just, like we've been saying, they're such a hot team. My only concern is a backdoor cover here, and it's one of those things like we were already saying, maybe Frank Wright has this comeback and they start shooting the ball down the field and they get a backdoor cover. But this Bills team, that's under a touchdown, obviously. So I like it at that number. Coulter, like you said, if that gets to 7.5, maybe I'm staying away from it. But I really hope they win. That's my AFC team, and I like their positioning here. So I'm with you.
You can't forget too; they haven't had a battle in a while. And I mean, we talked about Tua at the top of this. They haven't played a real quarterback in a while either. I mean, Tua is not a real quarterback, or at least not how he looked last week. No offense to Hughes. Cam Newton hasn't been a real quarterback all season. Drew Locke is a turnover machine and is a disgrace. The secondary in Denver had, I think, 6 guys out when they played them 3 weeks ago. We know Gilmore was out on that Monday night game. We know that the Dolphins had guys that were injured. I just feel like they played a bunch of limited teams. I think the Colts are actually a little bit more healthy. And that's why it's a stay away for me, because it's just like I feel like Buffalo hasn't been hit in the mouth. And what if Taylor, they open up the game with a 7-yard drive and Taylor scores a rushing touchdown and all of a sudden they're down 7-0. They haven't been in that spot in a while. So as a Bronco fan who lost to Jacoby Jones in 2012, I hate the spot when the most hot team in the NFL is playing on the first game on Saturday. So that's why a big stay away for me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That first slot, something always weird happens in that game. There's always something that happens.
They must be pissed that they got this slot.
Absolutely. Remember, this was, I believe, the same slot that when Andrew Luck had that massive comeback against the Chiefs like 4 or 5 years ago. I think that was the first game on Saturday. Yep. There's always something weird that happens, so it sucks for the Bills, but I hope they can avoid that one. Okay, Mr. Model, let's get your key pick.
All right, so for this one, I'm going to the well. I'm going to the guy that just can't miss. I'm going to Matt Nagy. I'm taking Chicago +10. I mean, this is just an absolute home run. I can't believe no one had picked this so far. To be honest, so I think Chicago has been playing better football than they had earlier in the season. Trubisky has actually had the offense, you know, respectable. They put up 16 points against Green Bay Packers last weekend, but prior to that, they had 41, 33, 36, 30, etc. So definitely been performing better than what they had been earlier this year. I think it's a tall order to try to stay with the New Orleans Saints. And, you know, given that I'm a ticket holder for them in our competition that we're doing, I will be rooting for them and expect them to win. But I like to think that Chicago can keep this one close, at least within 10 or less. So that's my pick for my second.
Mr. Model, didn't you know the New Year's resolution of this entire podcast? We're not betting with Matt Nagy.
Nope. 2021. Let's bring it on.
All right. I like it. Coulter, what do you got?
Yeah, this is a pass for me. I can't bet Matt Nagy, as you just said, Chaz. Coaching mismatch for me. It's a lot of points, so I get why Mr. Motto would be attracted to it. And at 10.5, I only can go Bears, right? You can't go Saints at 10.5. But again, Nagy, I have to stay away. I think it's actually going to be a pretty low scoring game. I wouldn't say my favorite pick of the week is the under here, but I think you actually have two underrated defenses. Let's not forget New Orleans just absolutely shut down Carolina's offense last week. You know, Carolina, what was preventing them from having a turnout like Houston had against Tennessee? Obviously, Tennessee's defense is a lot worse, but I would have thought that game would have been back and forth, high scoring with a team that had, you know, that was playing loose and limber. But instead, the Saints just cruised. Their defense looked really good. You know, I kind of like the Saints D to keep this one low, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing for the 10 or 10 and a half. I could see it being, you know, 24-13 and maybe you lose and you curse Matt Nagy. So that's why I'm going to stay away.
Hughes, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, I should have made my, one of my key picks was going to be the over in that game. I think it's a shootout. I don't know why. I just feel like this, the Saints always just, they can't figure it out. So I do, but at the same time, I lean Bears at 10.5. It's just such a huge number. So I'm no crossfire for me. But like I said, I do like the over. Though I do think that the Saints defense has been playing a lot better. And the Bears defense, we know is pretty good. I think this is just, I don't know, this feels like one of those Metrodome games. I mean, Superdome games. I just feel like there's going to be points.
You know what? I'm in a reverse course. Tony Romo is calling this game. I kind of agree with Hughes. I could see it being a wild Sunday afternoon affair. I could see this being the game of the weekend where it's just kind of like 39-36 final. And we're all just like, how did this game get so out of hand so quickly? I could see that, actually.
Do we know if Kamara's playing?
Oh, Kamara's playing.
He is. Okay.
Yeah, he's playing.
Yeah.
I think he practiced today.
Okay. Mr. Monal, I'm with you. At 10.5, that's too intriguing of a number. I'm probably going to stay away on this number when I'm actually putting in my bets. But at 10.5, I feel like you kind of have to take the Bears. Either take the Bears or you don't touch it. But it's interesting, Hughes and Coulter. I was actually leaning on the under here, Coulter, to go against you, Hughes. They're two pretty good defenses at the end of the day. I think we see kind of a similar game play out to what we just saw with the Saints and the Panthers, where the Saints jump out and have a pretty good size lead. Maybe the Bears get a little backdoor cover here, but ultimately you're looking at like a, you know, 24-17 type game, something like that. I don't know. Seems like it could be, but I'm not touching it at plus 10. So no crossfires there, Mr. Model. Well done.
Oof. Minefield avoided.
For my key pick, this one is making me a little nervous, but I'm going to take the under for the Bucs and the Washington football team. I saw it originally when it opened at 46.5, and I hammered that. I took that number. That's been bet down a little bit, so now it's a little more nerve-wracking. It's sitting at 44.5, but I'm still taking the under for two reasons. And I know we covered this a little bit when we talked about the Bucs game. I don't see the football team scoring points. I mean, in what world are they putting on more than 14 points on the Bucs? I just don't see Alex Smith being able to open the field and take control of that game. But they do have a good defense. So I think the Washington defense is going to limit the Bucs to not putting up a giant number. Maybe it's 26, 20, you know, 27 points, 30 maybe they even get to. But even if they get to 30, are you telling me that football team gets to 14? I just don't see that happening. So I like it at under 44.5. If that trickles up anymore, because it opened at 46.5, and I already locked my pick in there, definitely love it at that number. But I'll take the under 44.5. Coulter, what do you think?
Yeah, it's actually funny you mentioned this. Before the pod, I had targeted the Seahawks over and the football team under, and I was like, I don't want to give out two totals on the podcast. But yeah, I do like the under in this game quite a lot. So no crossfire on me. I just think Washington, you just mentioned it, I don't think they can get that many points. They don't have a lot of horses. I know I actually like their infrastructure on offense going forward with Gibson, McLaurin, and Thomas, but I just don't think Smith's the kind of guy to bring it together. And I don't know if they're necessarily dynamic yet. And it, you know what, if you know that you have McLaurin and if you're Todd Bowles, don't you just isolate and try to take him out of the game? I feel like Carolina was able to do that. And I know they were facing Haskins and Heinicke a couple weeks ago, but I don't know. I feel like opposing defenses have been able to zone in on McLaurin. And if you take him out, they really don't have an explosive playmaker deep down the field. And again, if you're Bowles, you have to know that Thomas has been kind of this check down Charlie for Smith. So you have to come up with something for him. And lastly, I think Bowles is going to come away as like a head coach candidate coming out of the weekend. I could definitely see that storyline on Monday being like, why hasn't he been interviewed for jobs? And it's probably because, you know, Tampa Bay wins this game 27-3 on Saturday night. So I like the under.
The other reason why he might not is that Jets stink is just still attached to him. But like it. Hughes, what do you think?
Well, Gase is getting a job at Alabama.
So, with this one, I think I'm with you. I mean, again, to your point, like if you look at football team, like, and you say, all right, so best case scenario, they score 14, maybe 17. That's still assuming that the Bucs put up a decent number. The game's outdoors. You know, I think we've talked about it. It's going to be at night. So I don't, the weather looks like it's going to be okay. It's like, it's going to be in the low 40s. Doesn't look like it's going to be any rain or anything. But yeah, no, I think I'd be on the under too. I kind of like the first half under as well. If to kind of double them up.
Yeah, and you guys know I hate betting the unders, and Coulter, I'm with you. I hate that I just gave out two of my picks are over unders, but they just feel right. These picks look like they're shouting to me, so I had to do it. What do you think, Mr. Model?
No dice for me. I'm staying away from that one. You know, if I think about it, the line they have right now out is that they're expecting Tampa Bay to score 26 and Washington football's team to score 18. You know,
I'd be under on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to me, like what I would say is I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but if I'm looking at Washington football team total, if that's at 18, I would gladly take that under, which would be my bet here. But, yeah, I'm going to stay away from crossfiring you.
Okay. Fair enough. That's the thing. And it's a night game with Brady. We've seen him play a little less sharp at these night games. It's past his bedtime. I'm hoping for, you know, a 24-10 game. Just want to see Brady have a little bit of a down game, and then we'll see the matchups in next week. Boys, I think we actually covered every game, right?
We touched on all of them.
Man, I cannot wait for this. It's going to be fantastic. Okay, let's do a quick pivot. Mr. Model, you've been working on your little college basketball model, and I know we're in the throes of the NFL playoffs here, but we're inching closer towards the peak of the college basketball season. So why don't you give us a little update on the college basketball model?
Yeah, so the model has been working since November 30th, and to date, I've placed over 100 bets, I should say. And so far, the model has been looking pretty good. It's hitting right at 56.7%. A couple just came in during the podcast while we were potting. So that's been really nice. It's been certainly profitable. Definitely some things I would like to tweak, but I've been quite pleased with how we've been doing so far. Although every time I try to get you guys involved, it hasn't gone well for me.
Hey, that's okay. And like we were saying before we hit record, if you're just throwing out one pick a week, that's a little, you know, tougher to navigate. When you give us five picks, we're expecting to maybe go 3-2, 4-1. That's a different story. But any plans for you to open up this kind of hedge fund and we just send you some money?
Yeah. We need to make sure. We'll see how this goes the rest of the year. We have January, February, and a little bit of March there to see kind of where this first season runs. Already some improvements I would like to put in here. I think the model could definitely get better in terms of how it's quantifying some of the outliers on both ends in terms of totals, you know, very high totals and very low totals. So I've already some things I'm thinking about of how I can do that, but we'll see how we land here in this first season of going live.
All right. I can't wait. We'll be doing more stuff in February and into March Madness, obviously. One last thing that I wanted to point out. We had a little suggestion from one of our most loyal listeners who suggested that we do a little morning of little quick little 5-minute hitter on our picks and how the lines might have changed and maybe last minute thoughts about these games. So I thought it was a pretty good idea. I know it was obviously more relevant last week in week 17 when we said a lot of things could change. So maybe, boys, we do a quick little 5-minute game day recap.
Oh, I think there'll be value on some of the totals, especially on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah. All right.
You also, there's like a chance, maybe a 1% chance that football team somehow upsets the great one on Saturday. I don't think this is going to happen, but if it happens, be prepared. I will come on Sunday morning and demand that Bruce Arians resigns because I don't know how you could actually lose this game if you're Bruce Arians. It is his fault and his fault only if they lose. I don't care about the defensive line on Washington. I don't care about Brady. I don't care about Alex Smith. It's on Bruce Arians. If they lose, it's all about a lack of preparation on his part. He deserves to be fired if they somehow lose this game.
Period. The look on Hughes's face right now.
Unless Eli Manning is going to come down from the rafters and lead this team on
it won't happen. I
whatever
agree.
Drive, this is not happening. I mean, I like to entertain the Ron Rivera story. It's been a great story. And I do think the football team, to your point, I think they've got some pieces in place where this team could do some damage in years to come. But unless Tom plays terrible, and again, the Bucs do have a couple people out, but this to me seems like a mismatch. Especially after last week, showing no life in a must win game. At times they showed no life. I shouldn't say at times they were fine, but I don't see that.
I'm just teasing the listener to come on Sunday morning in case the Bucs lose. Give him something to look forward to.
So you can hear me cry. So you can hear me cry.
I'll be ranting
against Bruce Arians.
The line is fiction can be fun, but I find the reference section a bit more enlightening. I just don't see that one happening. All right, gentlemen, that is episode 95 in the books. We will see everybody next week on Double Down Trent.
Baby, look at me. Look at me. Your money, and you know what else? You're a big winner tonight. I want to leave. You're a big winner. I'm going to ask you a simple question. I want you to listen to me. Who's the big winner here tonight at the casino? Huh? Mikey, that's who. Mikey's the big winner. Mikey wins.
Fucking asshole.
All right, fine. I'm an asshole, but you know what? You're the big winner tonight, Mikey. You're the big winner in more ways than one.